think we've had meeting after meeting, as we have said, that our job as a committee is to bring this forward to the select board, and that is all. And if anybody on this committee is interested in carrying Wynn to the next level, then they should become more involved at that level and go to the select board, say you want to be on this committee, or go before the select board and lobby for it. But I think as far as this committee is concerned, that's behind us.
Well,
I'd like to move forward to something else.
We spent 10 minutes on an issue in summary, because that meeting was important. I wasn't able to get there. And we had spent, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 meetings prior to that specifically on this. So it doesn't feel like wasting time to me. I'm ready to move on, too, as the agenda reflects. But I'm just trying to get a sense of what happened in the meeting I wasn't able to attend.
Getting a sense, I don't want to start bickering, but getting a sense of it is one thing. Talking about how to raise the money or what direction to go in to raise the money is another thing. I think I would like for us to move forward. I mean, we're going to get bogged down in this, and we're going to have a black eye as a committee. We're going to become politically insolvent. We're going to use up all our political.
Well, I personally feel absolutely fine with the way this committee's behaved. I think we've been above board, open. We've done nothing in hiding. We have no hidden agenda. Nobody on this committee has ever said they're pro a project on top of Ragged Mountain. If we were told to explore it, that's what we've done.
I'm
ready to move on if everyone else is.
Good.
Yes?
Agreed.
Where are we with PACE? Was that discussed in a way that was meaningful enough to end the issue for the time being or for us?
No, it's not ended. PACE has been it's been approved to take it to a public hearing. However, I'm not sure if you're interested in hearing my point of view on it, but I believe PACE has some issues. And I expressed those at the select board meeting. PACE, I think, has good heart, and he has the right thoughts. However, in today's environment with housing, long-term value, I mean, short-term value of housing, and current lending requirements, RESPA requirements, I have concerns whether PACE will actually reduce a buyer's ability to buy and a seller's ability to sell. And for example, might be, well, first of all, the gentleman from PACE could not say how appraisal standards will consider that, because this PACE project is financeable apparently over about a 20-year period, or roughly the payback of what they figure an improvement will be. So let's assume that a homeowner decides to spend about $15,000 on a project, and they finance it over, pick any period of time, 10 years, 15 years. It adds what essentially is a lienable amount of money against the property, not the seller, but the owner of the property. So now you're into it 5 years, and you decide you want to sell. Let's assume we're in like these economic conditions right now. So if you want to put your property on the market, there is that debt that's got to be retired somehow or dealt with somehow. So if the debt runs with the property and the buyer has to take possession of the debt, then how does the bank view that in today's financing environment? And further, how does the appraisal standards view that as value to the property? Those questions could be answered. And quite frankly, it seems to me that it's premature at this point, because there are more unanswered questions as to relationship of value to the property. Interest rates, terms, does a municipality do this, or does the municipality allow for formation of a co-op? You know, those questions aren't ready to be answered yet.
So is part of that rest on whether the investment the homeowner made has greater value than the debt that's still attached to the property? Because if the homeowner isn't going to make that investment unless they think over the long term it's going to pay for itself,
either
in the value of the property or in energy savings.
It's a requirement that it has to pay for itself over the term.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can get that financing. That's a rock-solid requirement. So whether it's 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, I don't know what the term will be that PACE will...
Yeah, you mentioned 20 as an outside limit.
Yeah, I've not heard of any PACE programs. There's only a couple in the country where they've actually done this, one on Long Island and the other out west somewhere. But I haven't even heard of a 20-year term. I think a lot of it is 10-year term, so it's 10% return on investment. So it's low-hanging. It has to be low-hanging fruit. In terms of efficiency.
My question on PACE is, what, if anything, does the select board want this committee to do with it as an issue? I mean, it seems like the select board is already well ahead of us in terms of understanding it, and I mean, what's the value of a token vote from the energy committee? Does the select board wish us to do research or ask specific questions or try and catch up with you, or is this not something for us to deal with because you guys have got that ball and you're running with it?
Well, I think we come up with answers to those questions, which are case representative we come up with, and I really would think that any effort on your part right now would be wasted. I mean, it's no sense to get into it. I see the project as too early on, and I'll be honest with you, I hope it doesn't make out a public hearing, because I think there's too many unknowns with this.
For prime time.
No, it's not.
But the only reason it came to us in the first place was Anita Scott, when she was on the board, thought, and the program was first announced, that it would be a logical connection to this committee.
We could pre-vet it for the select board.
Right, but I don't mean, it doesn't sound to me like we really have a role there.
We delay long enough so that the select board.
We have a certain level of expertise on the board that was there before.
There's too much baggage for the homeowner right now. Yeah. And it may make sense for certain homeowners that either are cash rich or equity rich or whatever, but for the average buyer, I think it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And today's new RESPA changes and appraisal standards, I don't believe, are fit for this program.
So I need you.
I would agree. I don't think there's much. I mean, I'm in that business, and I don't see much value to it.
I want to, because I think the heart is in the right place.
Absolutely, but
I don't think the tools are there.
So, is there federal money going by the wayside if Maine does not do something, or we don't do something with PACE?
I don't think that question was ever asked.
There's money to create that that help with the administrative sort of a corpus that can be borrowed from. So the idea is that it sets up a revolving loan fund basically, and that's what's there. But no, it's not been made evident to me that the interest rates would be lower, or that it's not like the town is going to gain any money from that. Prospect. It would just be a service, an additional service that would be available for people to access money that they might not otherwise be able to access through regular banking channels. It's a supposed promise of it.
Well, it seems like we do have some expertise. If we could be of help, we would like to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Hydro. Can you talk about Seabright and beyond?
Yeah, we can do a couple of quick updates, I guess. Seabright is functional, turbine 1 out of 2. Ross ran the rebuilt turbine for 3 or 4 days over Labor Day weekend. Shut it down on Monday of Labor Day weekend, because through the night on Sunday, while Ken Bailey was letting water out of the lake in anticipation of the storm, apparently the new motor has quite a noise to it, and several of the neighbors called complaining of the noise levels.
Having trouble concentrating, Scott?
Well, I'm not aware of this because I wasn't in the office on Labor Day. So this is brand new news to me.
And so right now, there isn't enough water to run the thing. So Ross has got the folks from Stolz Electric who rebuilt the motor, working with from engineers to figure out whether it's a vibration-based issue or a winding issue or a governor issue or some combination of the three. The neighbors that called all assured him that the noise was much louder than the facility ever was before. And Ross knew that this particular motor, the one that was rebuilt and installed, was in fact louder when it was running than the other one, but it was never loud enough to cause complaints from the neighbors.
I wonder if the police department has a way of measuring decibels. They used to have a... And I just noticed some guidelines to island wind that there was 45 decibels seemed to be the number.
And it depends where you measure it at, and I think the answer is yes, they're easily measurable. What I can tell you is nobody called during the day. It wasn't until the overnight.
By the way, Just for everybody's curiosity, I was over on Vinyl Haven a couple of days ago, and we pulled it right into the access road to the wind generators, which puts the wind generators about from here to the police station away at the furthest, and you can hear them.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you hear very you hear two noises. You hear the blades, and you hear the motor noises. But you don't have to go too much further away from that, and it fades right
on. On the hydro, I talked with the evolution company in Rockland, you know, yep. What makes the connect and so forth. They were just waiting for the town to have some fill.
Yeah, well, that was update number one, that the existing first urban is running. But Scott, you have a question?
Can I just offer a little historical perspective on noise and the turbines? When we first built the office next to the dam, we had several people say to us, oh, you're not going to want to be there. It's very noisy. We never had any problem whatsoever. On rare occasions, probably at spring flood, when they're really pushing water through, there'd be a very low kind of noise that you could barely perceive. But for whatever reason, Joe, at the time, he was pushing, I think, both turbines. Mm-hmm. There was no noise impact of any consequence.
A piece of this is also adjusting the vanes of the turbines and the gate, because the motor has to spin at a constant revolution per minute or it gets out of phase and bad things happen. So there are literally brakes on the motor. There's an exciter and a governor that will control that revolution. And if you've got the gates adjusted such that the shaft wants to spin faster than the motor is supposed to, you would get that breaking, screeching kind of as it, and if you adjust the gates down to let more water through, meaning there's more energy available from the river than you can use, that should smooth out somewhat. Will it all go away or not? I don't know, but there are controls within the motor to assure that RPM is held at the point where it's making electricity for the motor than it is. And Joe, as you remember, used to go over every morning.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the ear, and he'd do his thing, and off for the day. Ross hasn't got the ear yet, so there's some of that will have to happen.
But we do have,
given the nature of its mechanical manual settings.
There is somebody who can do that fine tuning on a daily basis.
Oh, Ross and they know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
They just don't have the precise expertise of having done it for years and years.
Are more modern turbines subject to the same thing?
They usually have automated control systems that would do that balancing and tuning without intervention.
Yeah.
Because they can monitor the motor and tell when it's
What's the status on the second turbine?
Yeah, so that was update number one. Update number two, the second turbine rebuild is still pending the application we made in July to Efficiency Maine for a $50,000 community demonstration project grant. That award should come out this month. They said 60 to 90 days. It's been 60. It hasn't been 90, but it's been 60. And if we're successful with that $50,000 grant, then the rebuild of the second turbine is funded, and whether it's evolution or going back to the same approach that Ross took for turbine one, that you don't have to decide that.
Evolution can rebuild that turbine?
They have a special bearing and
bearing
system that
presently,
that's supposed to be more
down to the bottom, and it's somewhere there or something like that. Where the evolution use their system, it would just hang there and be supported by the ground, the outside of the shaft.
Yeah, it's a vertical shaft turbine. Yeah. Water comes in and literally drops vertically through the turbine. So this is spinning, and the motor's mounted above the thing. So there are thrust bearings and longitudinal bearings that hold that shaft pretty precisely, or the whole thing gets out of whack, and it will make noise, and it will cause vibration.
When you're talking about motor, you're actually talking about the generator?
Yeah, the generator is nothing but a big three-phase motor that spins at a specific, it spins slowly, actually. Yeah. It's a 600 RPM motor instead of 18 or 36.
No, but it's essentially the same thing as a wind generator, except it's using...
Yeah, and if this thing spins too slowly, it actually consumes energy, because as I said, it will spin at 600 RPM. Mm-hmm. And if the water doesn't spin it that fast, it's going to take energy off the grid and spin itself, and you go backwards. So you've got to pay attention to when there's water and when there isn't enough to run it. That's the way Joe set it up. And normally those things are pretty well automated, so you don't have people coming and going every day. And that's a step that Ross would love to get to, but, that's...
I think he's got to produce some power.
Let's make some power, let's demonstrate its feasibility.
And what about the unit downtown? Has anybody ever looked at that one?
Well, what I started doing, and I'm waiting for a call back from the guy that's now the property manager at the mill here. Supposedly there's...
There was one downtown, but go ahead.
No, I haven't been anywhere down below the Knox Mill. Yeah,
okay.
I have a nice, if anybody wants to read a nice primer, I have about a 20-page primer that will walk you through hydropower, how it works, why it works, how you convert head and flow into...
Do you have a link to that?
Yeah, I'll send it out on email, but I have a hard copy too. Yeah, it's from a small hydro producer called Canyon Hydro.
So, excuse me one sec, so, Nora, that would be an action
item
that we want
to... Rick will send a link to a document about hydropower to the committee. In Bangor, the Bangor Water District put a microturbine on a major water transmission main, because their water supply comes from 15 miles away out in Sweater Pond in the back of Herman. And along the way up and down the hills, they have to reduce the pressure, and instead of using a valve to blow the energy off, which is what they did for years, they put in a turbine. And the friction of the turbine was enough to offset most of the energy that they used to blow away, so they generate electricity while they're reducing pressure, and it's a great application. And this company from the West Coast, Canyon Hydro, put the system together for them. And they also published this document, so it's a great way to walk through it. But I did walk the river and look at the two dams and the Knox. What I haven't did is in the bowels of the mill, because I believe there are facilities that may be reusable, starting at the upper dam down through all the way to the lower level before you get across Washington Street. And if that's the case, it's about the same drop. It's actually probably a foot or two more than the drop at Seabright. But it's not much more than that. And the flows would be the same. So in order of magnitude, the energy potential of those two dams, if you combine them, because together they're both pretty small, but if you combine them and have one system through the two dams, it's probably a little bit larger than the potential of Seabright. So, order of magnitude, Seabright projections were about $30,000 worth of energy value a year, about 300,000 kilowatt hours. This may be a little bit more than that, but it's not significantly more than that. It's not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of power. It's not, but it may be $30,000 or $40,000 worth of power which would be the limiting factor on a retail basis, and that would, from that, you would back into how much money you could spend to rebuild, recreate, install new to try and capture that and make the economics work. I thought I'd start there with the economics before we worry about who owns the dams and who controls the access and all that stuff. The order of magnitude, that's what it is.
I've expressed this on a number of occasions, and probably the numbers are not going to be great,
but it's something,
and the something is that it could conceivably reestablish a type of economy in this community. That we're all looking towards.
What does that
mean? I think it sends kind of a message to potential people who would like to relocate to our community that we're making serious efforts to have green energy, to create green power. I mean, how few people even know about Seabright, you know, which, I mean, that should be part of the resume of this community that we, how many communities can say that they use energy from hydroelectricity to treat their waste?
So
this is
Seabright, and the other two dams are owned by the town of Canada?
No. The dams at the end of Gunnebrook are owned by the town. The Seabright dam is owned by the town. That last dam,
this one,
the Montgomery Dam, that's below the Smiling Cow, is owned by the town. But the two drops upstream of that, through the mill, one on either side of Nolan Street, are not owned by the town. They're private property. They go with the mill complex. That's why I'm waiting for a call from this guy that is controlling that property. Like Seabright, if there's an opportunity to reuse existing penstocks or sluiceways or such, I don't know. There could be. Certainly, the entire mill basement area was fed from those dams, and the water wheels and mechanical devices that they used were a side stream of the river. Whether those could be refocused into a closed system that could feed the turbine or not, and at what expense, would be the next set of questions. And it does bring a slightly different air to it in that and they have a deck outside. The aesthetic value of the water going over the dam versus down a penstock underneath or more. You know, I would suspect there'd be more impact from diversions between those two structures than no water going over the spillway at Seabright.
I think if I owned that restaurant, I'd be happy to know that really high water, a lot of it is going to be going through a penstock and not through my porch.
And at low water, I mean, there's still the control of the water flow down the river is by DEP license. The town is required to let minimum flows go. Those minimum flows aren't enough to run the Seabright station, and they wouldn't be enough to run any other station. It wouldn't be worthwhile. They're very low flows.
Rick, has the town ever thought about offering all of our hydro facilities to a developer?
Not yet, because we really aren't in, we haven't, and we still aren't, in the normalized, full-scale generating game. And, you know, the problem with the dollars and cents of thinking that way is that unless you can link up these small stations with the retail value of the power, which is generally a net energy billing agreement, you can't make the numbers work. To try and generate 300,000 kilowatt hours at Seabright and sell them for 4 cents an hour on the spot market, you know, it's worth $12,000 a year. You're going to get $1,000 a month. You know, nobody's going to do it. But if you can turn it into $30,000 worth of retail power and not have to worry about the whole transactional costs, and if the town as a municipal owner, one of the benefits of the town, several benefits, one, all of the upstream river management issues of lake levels and pond levels and flow, but also, and especially the flood issues that the river presents. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to coordinate what goes through Seabright with what comes out of the lake. But also the fact that we're in the dam ownership business, and dam insurance, especially Seabright's a high hazard rated dam, because if it failed, there's significant property at risk downstream. To buy insurance as a private individual, we were all pretty convinced that Joe never really had enough insurance for that, but the town does.
Mm-hmm.
The town doesn't pay real estate taxes. The economics for the town, for Seabright, are pretty unique.
Yeah.
And pretty special to the town, in that I really think the town is going to get more economic value from that than any other owner could.
Yeah, I'm picking up from the way we've been having these conversations about the dams, not a surprise that town is reluctant to, pony up the money to put in new turbines. One that we can make an argument that over a 20-year life of those turbines, they're going to pay themselves back. But
and there's one piece of this that I haven't learned enough about yet that I think is the opportunity in that regard. So as the owner, that facility should qualify for some renewable energy credits, some RECs that are saleable and that have value. But how to value them and how to sell them and how to access that market and play that game is a process. It's like getting your building LEED certified. You got to start back at a certain point, or you got to make commitments to change the facility to reach certain places. But there are RECs available for projects like Seabright. Those can be sold by the town and help pay for some of the improvements at the place or anything else that's not doing money.
I'm just thinking at the end of the game, part of the exercise here is to extract electrons from the water. Is the town best able to do that? Or is some developer more able to do that? And the town shares in some way the benefits, but...
Yeah, I don't see the town being a lousy operator. Hydro on a small river like the Muganicook is a labor of love or a hobby.
It's not a developer, it's not a system.
Yeah, it's not an economic driver.
No.
But in exchange for that, you get some great. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to worry about fish passage. You might have heard on the radio this morning, fish passage in New Brunswick is back on the table. We have a fish ladder. It spent millions of dollars to redo that dam in the 80s, and now they want it taken out because certain fish can make it up the ladder they built, and certain fish aren't. Nobody knows why, but there's an impact. And that's the nature and risks of larger scale. I know it's... It's not without its environmental realities.
Does that not come into play with Muganicook River, or is it because it's been dammed for so long that nobody has an expectation of any fish migration?
That's
killed them all already.
It's also the nature of the stream. That if you go back to what was originally, if you take the dams out and try and envision what was there without the dams, in July and August, there wasn't any water coming down the stream. Most years, period. It's actually better habitat with a managed release than there would have been if the lake was half its size and it overflowed its natural spillway when it rained and filled up enough to do that. And then you get the floods and the high flows, and it's just a whole different system. So they really
change the appearance of the river.
You take the dams, mm-hmm. all the dams away, and you still haven't got very much in certain times of the year.
Yeah. So it's probably never
a challenge. Mm-hmm.
Can we go through the same procedure that Island Wind went through about tax credits and whatnot?
Yeah, it's the same basic
can we
we don't, as the owner and as a tax exempt entity, a municipal entity, we're not going to play in the tax credit game unless you find some private entity to own the generating facility. But the RECs, the renewable energy credits, is a whole different market, and it's a whole different opportunity for the town as the owner to get some capital out of it.
Yeah.
And it's a direct relationship with the amount of power it generates.
So who investigates it?
Well, I've got it on my list of things to do, but if anybody else wants to jump into renewable energy credits.
I mean, is that something that should be done on the municipal level?
I think it will absolutely need to get there. I assumed it would come to us to get there. I don't think it's going to be a huge opportunity, but it may, as Sid said, it may help pay for a reinvestment in the next turbine if we can, if we can access those markets. I just got to figure out the rules of my game.
Produce enough power, let's say, to cover the
wooden
stations.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many kilowatt hours you could get out of for the year.
Well, like I said, it'll be comparable to Seabright, so 300 or plus or minus kilowatt hours.
Yeah.
I went to a Woodard and Kern consulting engineers held an energy seminar at USM a week ago, and I went down to that, and they had one of the speakers talking specifically about renewable energy tax credits and RECs, and she sent me some information. So as soon as I get it, I can send it.
Can you get more power by modernizing the units up there?
It'd be incrementally small.
Using this system, you're getting most of our.
Yeah. And when you read this little article, it really does tell you about the nature of run of the river hydro flow and head and flow and head. There's only so much energy.
An interesting stat I heard the other day, which maybe you're all familiar with, but that 1 megawatt of power equals the use of approximately 800 homes. That 1 megawatt can service 800 homes.
I've seen that number from 200 days.
Really?
Yeah, it's all about
generating capacity. Yeah. So anyway, I've done some work, but that's as far as I've done.
Great. So how can we be about? I think we'd all like to get that link to the 20-page summary.
Yeah, I'll get that sent around. When I hear from this fellow that might, if I can con him into letting us into the basement and take a tour, I'll send that date and time around, and maybe most of us can walk through and see what's there and what's not there.
The Washington Street building sold. You know that? Right?
Building 6?
The condo building.
Yeah. Recently?
Sold a guy named Nash, Michael Nash.
And I think everything we're interested in is on the other side
or
of the
on the mechanic street. Yeah.
Great. And I only know that because Joe Sawyer said he looked at it, and Chip Lake had been through the basement of the building and said some of the stuff was still there. I've never seen pictures of it.
I thought there was a rumor going around that NDNA had filled the penstock with concrete or something.
It's possible.
Sealed off.
It's possible.
Yeah. What's the penstock? Is that what that shaft is you're talking about?
Well, it would be a pipe. The way I would envision the mill working before, the upper dam above Milton Street would be piped down into the mill. Because you want to get the water up here as high up above you as you can to get the most energy out of it. So the reason that upper dam is there is to capture the drop without doing it in one place.
Mm-hmm.
If you can make it happen close enough and run a pipe down, then you effectively accomplish the same thing as one big thing.